Yes, my friends, this is Health Conspiracy Radio. I am your host, Nick Brandigan. Thank you for listening to us on this Monday morning, February 2nd. We are broadcasting from Las Vegas, Nevada. Who is we? I have a special guest co-host with me today. Say hello.
Hi.
Hi, my daughter Naima is broadcasting with me today. We're going to go over some of the top stories that I've been researching and following on. And before we get into that, first of all, Health Conspiracy Radio is supported by our friends at LasVegasHomeopathy.com. Go visit Dr. Somia Sridharan. If you're in Las Vegas, you can get some homeopathic remedies and a doctor that's going to put you on a good nutrition plan, not just give you some prescription pills and say, go home and call me when the other side effects kick in so I can prescribe more and make more money off you. No. To Dr. Somia, you are a patient and not a dollar sign. If you live outside of Las Vegas, she is available for Skype consultations. But again, for Las Vegas residents, check out GetVeggies.com, the only certified organic, USDA certified organic CSA program in Las Vegas. CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture. You can get your fresh organic fruits and veggies from them every week. Their website is GetVeggies.com. See my weekly vlogs and their Facebook page, Facebook.com/GetVeggies. Boom. What's the first story, young Naima?
Our first story is
GMO-free USA finds GMOs in weed killer in Kellogg's Fruit Loops. First of all, let's say this. If the main reason you're eating Fruit Loops, or you're not eating Fruit Loops, is because GMOs are in them, then you got a lot of learning to do. Those artificial dyes are poisons for your children and for you if you're an adult and you're still eating like you're five. The artificial dyes are considerably worse than the GMOs. The GMOs have been shown to be, lots of studies show heart problems, organ issues, cancerous tumors. The list goes on. So we know GMOs had the potential to be pretty terrible, but it's really undebated about these artificial dyes. If you do a quick internet search for food dye symptoms or food dye ADD or ADHD, you will see that there's no such thing as ADHD. There's no such thing as ADD. Those are just the side effects of these artificial dyes that are going into children's cereal. Naima, do you know what ADD is?
No.
Attention deficit disorder, where they say kids and some adults don't have the ability to pay attention to things. But a lot of the behavior problems are caused by these artificial dyes in cereals like Fruit Loops and Captain Crunch and all these other awful, 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 Lucky awful Charms. Lucky Charms, yeah, all these poisons that people give children. I say poison quite literally. It's not going to kill you right away, but it's going to cause a lot of issues in the neurological system, and that's caused the behavior problems in children. But that's not bad enough. GMO Free USA today published the results of an independent lab testing, which documented that Kellogg's Fruit Loop cereal contains high levels of insecticide-producing genetically engineered corn that is regulated by the EPA. Tests also documented the presence of glyphosate, the main chemical of Roundup weed killer. The public interest nonprofit recently launched Operation Label GMOs to test popular products for genetically engineered ingredients and glyphosate, which is heavily sprayed on GMO crops. There is a substantial and growing peer-reviewed scientific evidence that both GMOs and glyphosate are damaging to health. GMO Free USA plans to expand testing to include 2,4-D, dicamba, astrazine, and neonicotinoid insecticides. Yes. Do you have a comment?
Don't eat it.
It's that simple. Don't eat it. Don't buy it for your kids. This is good testing. It's good that they do this for the people that are thinking, oh, it's just food. It's not so bad. Like, you know, part of me says, yeah, duh, you're testing Fruit Loops. Of course they're contaminated with toxins. Thanks for the news flash. But the other part of me says there's people that are still asleep, people that don't know this information that's being reported on right now. So it's good that this stuff is tested to maybe wake someone else up to say, oh, I didn't know it was that bad, that there's still detectable levels of pesticide in your disgusting Fruit Loops. So continuing with the article.
It's annoying.
That's what Naima says. The agrochemical corporations that produce GMOs together with Big Food have spent millions of dollars in recent years to narrowly defeat citizens' ballot initiatives for mandatory GMO food labeling in California, Washington, Oregon, and Colorado. Kellogg's alone has spent nearly $2 million to fund anti-labeling efforts. We find it disturbing that Kellogg's is feeding children unlabeled GMOs and toxic herbicides. Statistics shows that it is the first generation of children that are sicker than their parents. Is Kellogg's endangering our children? Based on the growing body of scientific evidence, we believe so, and we hold Kellogg's accountable. Parents need to know what they're feeding their children, and Kellogg's is spending millions to keep the composition of their products hidden, says Diana Reeves, executive director of GMO Free USA and mother of three. Probably need to get her on the show, do an interview with her about this topic. Reeves echoes the sentiment of a rapidly growing movement in the U.S. that is demanding the removal of GMOs from the food supply and the reduction of pesticide use in agriculture. And I love that they say the removal of GMOs and not the labeling of GMOs. Because, hey, why don't we just put freaking rat poison in the food and label it? Say, like, oh, there's rat poison in there, but it's labeled, so blah, 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 blah. No, we want the rat poison out of the food. We want the GMOs out of the food. We want the glyphosate out. Get the artificial dyes out. Yo, stop buying this stuff for your kids. Like, if you're listening to this, you have the ability to follow up your research. I don't use the term bad parent lightly. But if you are listening to this and you don't do the follow up research and you still buy your kids this crap, you're a bad parent. I'm sorry, but it is what it is. GMO Free USA is calling on Kellogg's to commit to removing GMO ingredients from all their products and enroll in the non-GMO project verification. And now that is what I call a step in the right direction if they did that. But let's not hold our breath. Okay, so what do you think, Naima? Fruit Loops? Yeah? Fruit Loops? More Fruit Loops, everybody?
Yeah.
Yeah, more Fruit Loops? Cool. You want to eat Fruit Loops?
No.
You just said more Fruit Loops for everybody.
Ah, I thought you meant that.
No. No more Fruit Loops for kids. Are you going to be an activist when you get a couple of years of age more?
Is it good?
Being an activist is good.
Yeah, then.
Yeah. Like a little, you could be the next Rachel Parent. All right, let's talk about something else that's an important topic that we don't cover too much on the show. Sleep. Is there a conspiracy on sleep? I don't know, man. I do think the work 8-5, rest 8-5, sleep 8-5, or... No, what am I saying? Work 8 hours, play 8 hours, sleep 8 hours. That's the new modern form of slavery. But I think sleep is something that very few people really know. You know, what's the good amount of sleep? They say 8 hours sleep, but that doesn't apply to everybody. For the guy that just goes and does his job and sits on the couch and eats potato chips, and the guy or gal or whatever that goes and does a really productive day and goes to the gym and goes and does something else productive, do they both need 8 hours? I don't think so. First of all, I find the less processed food you eat, the more sleep you need. Something else I found out is that when I do intermittent fasting, I get better quality sleep. And that's why I'm back to intermittent fasting. I got off it for a while, you know, not to digress too much, but got back into heavy weightlifting and thought I needed to eat more and more. And, you know, I'm just not doing it. My aim is not to gain as much muscle as possible. My gain is just to be physically fit and respect the body temple for it is. Okay? But let's look at an article from Mercola.com, The Year in Sleep. I probably won't read the whole thing, but it's worth taking a look at. Considering how important sleep is for survival, very little is known about how much sleep humans actually get each night. There are surveys that have been done, of course, but most of these rely on self-reporting of sleep time, which can be notoriously inaccurate. If you go to bed at 10 p.m. and get out of bed at 7 a.m., you might say you slept for 9 hours. In reality, you probably spent at least 15 to 30 minutes falling asleep and you may have woken up during the night once more. With the new advent of fitness tracking wristbands such as Jawbone's UP24, however, we now have access to actual sleep data and more from wristband users. The data is quite useful on a personal level. Newer devices like Jawbone's UP3 that should be released in early 2015 can even tell you what activities led to your best sleep and what factors resulted in poor sleep. However, it's also fascinating on a large scale as the data reveals insights into sleep patterns from around the world. Now, I'm just going to comment on the part where he says falling asleep for 15 to 30 minutes. One thing I've been doing these past couple months, which have been helping a lot, is if it takes me more than 10 minutes to fall asleep, I get out of bed. I no longer waste that time in bed. I'll get up and I'll put on a DVD or I'll read a book, whatever the mood is feeling. Some information I recently got from SteveParlina.com. He says 5 minutes. I go for 10, but I am in agreement with that. And I'm looking at the Jawbone, UP24 wristband. So apparently it gives you, it tracks your activity. So lets you know the exercise and the calories burned. It is, tracks your sleep, easily tracks hours slept and the quality of sleep. Smart Coach learns your habits and gives you personalized suggestions to help you get to bed on time. Smart Alarm silently awakes you at the optimal moment in your sleep cycle so that you feel refreshed. Now, that's an interesting concept. It looks like they run $130, but that's cool. That may be something I'll be implementing in the future, because my plan right now is get used to getting up at about 3:50, 4 a.m. every morning, do the radio show, and once I get used to that, then start doing the radio show in the evening so I can start writing during those wee morning hours. But anyway, let's get back to the article. So what do you think about sleep, Naima?
It's a little important. You need your energy.
Yeah, you sleep very well. You'll sleep for 10 hours or more.
And I usually sleep until 10.
10? What time did you go to bed?
Late?
What?
You always let me go to bed late.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is you look like you get great sleep. You sleep throughout the night. You don't wake up. Maybe wake up to crawl in my bed. You don't ever seem tired during the day, like you ever need a nap. Unlike me, sometimes where I do feel like I need a nap. I eat a little bit of sugar and it knocks me out, so I'm quitting sugar. We're quitting cane sugar this year, girl. We're going to figure other things out. Well, let's read a little bit of this article. Jawbone impressively collected data from 1 million UP users. Dr. McCullough was one of them in 2014, revealing a year in sleep. There were some differences by country, but three events seemed to influence sleep patterns in the most country tracked. Sporting events, which has no effect on me at all, because sports are stupid. Time changes and holidays. In the U.S., for instance, Americans tend to sleep longer on three-day weekends and holidays like Thanksgiving weekend. Brian Wilt, principal data scientist at Jawbone, detailed 9 more fascinating facts about sleep habits from around the world. United States, a practice of moving the clocks one hour ahead for daylight savings time in the spring leads to the worst sleep of the year, with Americans losing about 13 minutes of sleep that night. Canadians woke up 39 minutes early and lost 30 minutes of sleep to watch hockey during the Winter Olympics.
Hockey finals.
Thank you. Germans lost about an hour of sleep the night the team won the 2014 World Cup. Residents of these countries sleep in much later, or residents of Italy and France sleep in much later during the week in August, when most take vacation and businesses often shut down. Russia made a permanent switch to wintertime in October 2014, allowing Russians to wake up about a half hour later each day. People in Japan lost sleep during the World Cup matches as they had to get up very early to watch the games. Australians tend to have the earlier bedtimes. Okay, this is not really groundbreaking information right here. So how much sleep are you getting? You may be surprised about how little sleep you're... I should read these articles ahead of time so I can skip over the parts that I don't think are important. Doesn't that make sense?
A little.
A little. You may be surprised about how little sleep you're actually getting. When I first started using a fitness tracker, I was striving to get 8 hours sleep, but my Jawbone UP typically recorded me at 7.5 to 7.75. I've since increased my sleep time, not just in time in bed, but total sleep to have over 8 hours per day. And the fitness tracker helped me realize that unless I am asleep, not just in bed, but asleep by 10 p.m., I won't get my 8 hours. Gradually, I've been able to get this down to about 9:30 p.m. So even if you go to bed at a reasonable hour, you still might be lacking in sleep aside from using a fitness tracker. How can you tell if you're getting enough, and how much do you actually need? What are you pointing at? Okay, I know where I'm at. Thank you.
No, my name is in it.
Oh, that's right. Dr. Ruben Naiman. I don't know if that's how you say it, but yeah, it's kind of your name with an N on the end. That's pretty cool. Good catch. Dr. Ruben Naiman, a clinical psychologist, author, teacher, and leader in integrative medicine approaches to sleep and dreams, recommended to simply, you got to not block the microphone, babe, to simply sleep enough hours so that your energy is sustained through the day without artificial stimulation, with the exception of a daytime nap, which he believes you are biologically programmed for. I agree with this functional description rather than trying to come up with a specific numeric range. I would add to that guideline, however, the suggestion to watch out for physical and biological symptoms. For example, when I push myself and don't get high quality sleep or enough sleep, I'm predisposed to postprandial hypoglycemia. In other words, I have a low insulin resistance when I sleep poorly. It doesn't take much sugar or carbs for me to be easily metabolized and drop my blood sugar, which also makes me really sleepy. When I get enough sleep, I am far less susceptible to it. So that's really interesting observations and concepts. And he goes on to talk about the risk of just getting by with nothing to sleep. Of course, his article was posted up in the show notes on how to get truly resting sleep. Is the duration, the number of hours you sleep, are highly individual. Timing, the habit of going to bed approximately the same time each night, even if the sleep duration is the same, when the timing of your sleep is shifted, it's not going to be very resting. The thing I read from the Steve Pavlin article, and I'll have to post that in the show notes too, is he focuses on getting up at the same time every day and allowing your body to tell you when it's time to go to sleep. Because when you get time to sleep, your body's going to release certain hormones in the body that make you sleepy. So what he says, he gets up at 5 a.m. every morning. Sometimes he goes to bed at 9. Sometimes he goes to bed at 11. It's not the same from night to night, as long as that time you're waking up is the same. But let's move on from this article. Lots of good resources on getting sleep. Let's move on to the fluoride issue. Naima, do you know what fluoride is?
Things that make kids dumb in their stuff.
In their stuff? What do you mean, their stuff?
Like water?
Yeah, you're so smart. It is the fluoride's put in the water by local governments. It lowers IQs of children. It's completely unnecessary to be in there. Anyone who argues, you know, I don't want to be mean to anyone, but anyone who argues that fluoride should be in the water is a moron and an idiot and is stupid. And the reason I shouldn't be mean like that, because they're probably a victim of the fluoride in their water. But if you really think a whole city or town should be medicated when no one's controlling the dose, when it has to do with teeth, the government doesn't give a crap about any other health issue, but they care so much about teeth, we're going to put fluoride in the water. Oh, but the CDC says it's one of the great health successes of the 20th century or 21st century. Well, first of all, who cares what the CDC says, because they're a PR firm for the pharmaceutical and vaccine industry. Second of all, if no one's controlling the dose of the fluoride and you think it should be in there, you're stupid. And I don't want to be mean and call people stupid, but you're stupid if you think that. So if I offended you, good. Hopefully it'll lead to you becoming a better person. Alright, anyway, enough of me. Enough of that. We're on DallasNews.com. After a year of debate, Dallas City Council votes to not remove fluoride from the city's water supply. Well, la-dee-da, Dallas City Council, aren't you the humanitarians of Texas? During the spring of 2014, a faction of fluoride foes began demanding that the Dallas City Council flush it out of Dallas's water supply, and At the time, they had but a single true ally, Dallas City Council member Sheffy Cadane, who claimed his reasons were financial. It would save the city slightly more than $1 million over 3 years. In scientific, have you read the disclaimer on toothpaste, which says, do not swallow. If you swallow this toothpaste, get your stomach pumped. But in recent months, the anti-movement began attracting other supporters, among them a few less vocal city council members, Howard the Dirt Doctor Garrett, who told the city council Wednesday morning that his brother vehemently disagrees with undoing of the 1966 ordinance that put fluoride in Dallas's water. So too does Lawrence Olinsky, the dean of Texas A&M University, Baylor College of Dentistry, who told the council this morning that removing fluoride from the water would be a tremendous disservice to the citizens of Dallas, especially children. And the Dallas City Council agreed. Only Caden and Medrano voted against the $1 million+ contract with Mosaic Crop Nutrition to fluoridate Dallas's water for the next 3 years. Now, I haven't been to Mosaic's, now I'm digressing from the article. I have not been to Mosaic's website in a while, but if you go down there and you go to their website and you type in the chemical sheet for fluoride, there's numerous warnings on it saying it's a toxic substance, saying it can cause many, many diseases and illnesses. I don't have it on me. Which is bad. And it says, if you touch the fluoride, the powder that goes into the water, seek immediate medical attention. It says on there, toxic to ingest. It's toxic to ingest. But guess what, Naima?
What?
They put it in the water. Magic. No longer toxic. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't make sense.
Oh.
Because the concentrated form is toxic, but if we put just a teeny little bit in the water, then it's not toxic anymore. Oh, wow. So, thank you. You know, I don't live in Dallas. They fluoridate the water in Las Vegas, and there's many mornings spent at the county commissioners' meetings where they just wash their hands and say, hey, Jack, we don't have the power to get the fluoride out of the water. Sorry, it's a state issue. When I pointed out that they do have the power to have a look at it. They said, oh, okay, we'll look into it. And no, we don't. So, sorry, Dallas. What's the next step? What do you do? I don't know. Let's move on. Let's get back to vaccines. I've been covering vaccines a lot, and this is slowly but surely becoming the most important issue to me. Even maybe more important than the fluoride, more important than the GMOs, is the vaccination of Americans. I'm on naturalblaze.com. What to expect from your doctor when you say no to vaccines? Well, you're going to see probably some hyperventilation, some fear-mongering going on. I don't know what's wrong with these doctors. You know, I guess it's the system. I don't think they're actually bad people. But when someone says, you know what, maybe I don't want to get a vaccine, and you go into fear-monger mode with your patient who you're supposed to be taking care of, maybe you are not the best person in the world. Maybe you do need to take another look at your values and why you became a doctor in the first place. Naturalblaze.com, what to expect from your doctor when you say no to vaccines. As more parents have become aware of the risk and side effects of vaccines, many vaccination rates have been declining. Pharmaceutical companies and doctors alike are concerned about this awakening, so they have created training materials to help vaccine providers handle what one manual refers to as the vaccine hesitant parents. Or I would change that to parents that think for themselves. You have an eyelash on you. You should blow it and make a wish. When you take your child to their healthcare provider for a visit, you may have a list of questions to ask them about vaccines. You might be wondering about the risk of autism, the side effects of a vaccine, or the damaging effect of dozens of vaccines will have on your child's immune system. And your child's doctor will have the answers, the ones they are trained to give you. Organizations such as the World Health Organization and the National Academy of Pediatrics, two names you might trust but should not, have created brief manuals for doctors, nurse practitioners, physicians assistants, and even pharmacists, teaching them how to successfully deal with parents who question or refuse vaccines. Who is really training your child's doctor? Let's find out who wrote the training manuals. An online publication of the Journal of Pediatrics instructs doctors and other healthcare providers how to respond to parents who question vaccination. One of the authors of that paper, Dr. C. Mary Healy, served on an advisory board for Novartis vaccines. She also received research grants, a research grant from Sanofi Pasteur. Your child's doctor will tell you what Dr. Healy said to say, but your child's doctor won't tell you that Dr. Healy was under the influence of Big Pharma when she wrote the script. Another author of the training manual, of the training material rather, Dr. Larry Pickering, worked for the Center for Disease Control and Prevention and Emory University, both of which have strong ties to vaccine manufacturers. Emory University owns a significant amount of stock in a vaccine company called GeoVox. If you want to learn more about why Emory University is a suspicious organization and you should not be trusted, read this informal call. Read this informative article, and of course the article is going to be up in the show notes at healthconspiracy.com. Another easy-to-read training publication, perfect for busy, overworked doctors who don't have time to research vaccines in depth, was created by the World Health Organization, who receives more funding. WHO receives more funding from organizations than it does from its member nations, including the Rockefeller Foundation, which has ties to many large vaccine companies and owns more than half pharmaceutical interests in the U.S. What's inside these vaccine-funded training guides? Your child's doctor may have already read these publications, as they are concise and provide exact scripts depending on how you as the parent may question a vaccine. These materials also train nurses, emphasizing the important role a nurse plays in maintaining practice-wide commitment to high vaccination rates. Both training manuals outline several similar misgivings parents may have about vaccines, including the following common objections addressed in the World Health publication, which refers to concerned parents as fence sitters and worrieds. How do you say that word?
Where?
W-O-R-R-I-E-D-S.
What is that?
Worry words?
Worrieds.
Worrieds. Okay, well, that's a silly word. They would think whether each vaccine is needed, whether giving several vaccines at one time can cause harm, whether vaccine ingredients are harmful, how well each vaccine works, and these questions parents might ask, as published by Pediatrics, questions about whether vaccines cause autism, questions about whether vaccines are dangerous for infants than the diseases they prevent, questions about the number of vaccines and vaccine ingredients, questions about side effects, questions about unknown serious events. As you know, these concerns are valid and real, yet the guidelines written by vaccine-influenced doctors downplay parents' unease by reducing real conversations to repartee with answers that lack any scientific evidence. What is your child's doctor trained to tell you? Have you asked your child's healthcare provider questions about the risk of vaccines? Here are some of the scripts in the guide published by the World Health Organization offering answers doctors can memorize when parents question vaccines. Parent, all these people that think MMR vaccine causes autism must be onto something. Healthcare provider, autism is a burden for many families and people want answers, including me, but well-designed and conductive studies that I can share with you show that MMR vaccine is not the cause of autism. Parent, what are all these vaccines for? Are they really necessary? Healthcare provider, and I don't even like that they say this is healthcare provider because they're not. They should just call them prescription vaccine pusher, drug dealer. Anyway, what are all these vaccines for and are they really necessary? Uninformed doctor. I know you didn't get all these vaccines when you were a baby, neither did I, but we are both at risk of serious diseases. Today we are lucky to be able to protect our babies from many of these serious diseases with vaccines. Parent, I'm not really comfortable with my child getting so many vaccines at once. Uninformed doctor. There's no proven danger in getting all the recommended vaccines today. That's unbelievable. At any time you delay a vaccine, you leave your baby vulnerable to disease. It's really best to stay on schedule. But if you're very uncomfortable, we can give you some vaccines today and schedule you to come back for the rest soon. But this is not recommended. This is awful, man. They actually tell the doctors to say this to parents who just care about getting their vaccines, their kids vaccinated, not getting their kids vaccinated, or what might happen to either the kids vaccinated. All right, it's early. I'm mumbling. I apologize. Probably make this the last article and wrap it up. So let's continue on. Parent, I'm worried about the side effects of vaccines. I don't want my child to get any vaccines today. Uninformed doctor, I'll worry if your child does not get vaccines today because the diseases can be very dangerous. Most are still infecting children in the European region. We can discuss the side effects right now and talk about how rare serious vaccine side effects are. Parent, you really don't know if vaccines cause any long-term effects. Uninformed doctor, we have years of experience with vaccines and no reason to believe that vaccines cause long-term harm. I understand your concern, but I truly believe the risk of diseases is greater than any risk posed by a vaccine. Vaccines will get your baby off to a great start for a long, healthy life. That is the biggest crock of S-H-I-T that I've ever heard, that last line. Wow. Did you notice how the doctor or nurse does not really address the parents' concerns about vaccination? Of course they don't. And the article goes on to give some additional techniques the doctors are trained with. And we'll end it here with, what will you say to your pharma-trained doctor? Now that you know that your child's doctor is using a script when you have a conversation about vaccines, you will need your own script when they remind you it's time to vaccinate your child. Intimidation, uncertainty, and worry are very common feelings for parents as they are thinking about how to tell their child's doctor that they are questioning, delaying, or avoiding vaccines. These sentiments subside with time and research. As you become more educated in your decision, you will feel confident, empowered, and self-assured. At your child's appointment, you can let their doctor know that you will not be getting any vaccines at this visit, or say that you are still researching about a specific vaccine, or explain that your child was recently ill and you will not be vaccinating today for that reason. Remember, different kinds of vaccine exemptions are available in all 50 states. In addition, please know that well baby and well child visits are primarily scheduled for vaccination purposes. That's me digressing from the article. I didn't know that. It's very interesting. These visits are especially comforting for first-time parents, but if your child is in good health, they may not be necessary if you are not vaccinating your child. And that was as a pretty good point that Dr. Somia Sridharan brought up in our last interview on Health Conspiracy TV, that you don't need wellness checks for your child. And she goes, her patients get worried, oh, maybe I should do a wellness check. Is the child energetic? Are they playful? Are they happy? Then no, you don't need a wellness check. So we're going to wrap up early today on this edition of HealthConspiracy.com. Again, visit my website, Health Conspiracy, or this edition of Health Conspiracy Radio. Visit my website, HealthConspiracy.com. Sign up for the newsletter. I'm going to be sending out weekly newsletters informing of upcoming guests, any special events I'll be doing, articles I'll be writing. Sending you a newsletter once a week, so that is available at healthconspiracy.com. I'm also adding a lot of sections, so if you go there now and you see all the sections on top, and they all say coming soon, most of them will say coming soon for the next few months, but slowly but surely updating the website to make it more interactive, to give you reasons to want to come back and share it with your friends. So this is Nick Brannigan signing off with my quiet little co-host, Naima. Say goodbye.
Bye.
All right, my friends. We'll see you tomorrow on Health Conspiracy Radio.